This is WSIU In Focus. As we celebrate Illinois' 200th birthday, we now visit a historic site in the Metro East, which has tremendous significance for the state and beyond.
We use the term city when we talk about Cahokia because it was the largest one in North America.
That's Bill Eisminger. He's assistant site manager at Cahokia Mounds State Historic Site.
It's the largest settlement in North America, north of Mexico. There are some bigger sites in Mexico, but in the United States, or north of Mexico, we're the largest prehistoric Indian settlement.
Okay. And people like to have specific numbers. When generally does the research say that people started congregating here in the bottoms, Bill?
Well, we have evidence of people having been here since the end of the Ice Age in this area.
Which is what, 9,000?
It's about 9 to 10,000 B.C., And so there's that's what we call the Paleo-Indian period. Then that's followed by what's called the Archaic period from about 8,000 to 1,000 B.C. And then we have what we call the Woodland period from about 1,000 B.C. up to almost 1,000 A.D. Then we have the Mississippian period, of which Cahokia was a part. So there have been people here for, 12,000 years. But at Cahokia itself, there's initially kind of a late woodland settlement. Several probably scattered small villages on the property that we now call Cahokia Mounds, and before the mounds were here.
And because of the abundant water and food in this area, which is just across the river from present-day St. Louis, Eisminger says the place really took off.
And then it really starts to grow into the big city after 1000 A.D. and around 1050 or so, there's sort of the big population explosion, and that's when they're starting to build most of the mounds and other activities.
Yes, you heard right. He did use the word city.
We use the term city when we talk about Cahokia because it was the largest one in North America. And it had, surrounding communities as well. There was a group of about 50 mounds in East St. Louis, another 27 mounds in downtown St. Louis, just north of the Arch. Most of those got destroyed as those cities grew up. But the bases of some of those mounds are still intact in East St. Louis, we've discovered. So we refer to that whole complex as Greater Cahokia.
Those mounds. Thanks to the preservation efforts by groups, including the state of Illinois and volunteers, you can still see many of these mounds today just outside the city of Collinsville. And one of the most impressive is Monk's Mound, about 1,000 feet long, 700 feet wide, and 100 feet straight up. And on that day that I was there, which was during the big annual archaeology field day, I took the hundreds of steps straight up to the top of the mound and marveled at its size. And I got goosebumps thinking that back then, engine-powered earth-moving equipment was centuries away, and so I had to ask, is it true they were all built by literally digging dirt from some place, putting it on your back in a vessel and carrying it up?
Yeah, basket load at a time, and probably, as much as 50 pounds at a time people were carrying. And we still see where they got the dirt. We still can see borrow pits, the depressions in the ground that when it rains a lot, they have water in them. They hold like little ponds and lakes around the site. And most of them are on this southern part of our site where there's more clay in the soil, which they preferred for the mountain construction.
And there are plenty of mounds. And on the day I interviewed Bill, many of the volunteers were both out at the digs and inside the beautiful visitor center, looking at the various artifacts that have been found as researchers continue to dig at the mounds. And inside the visitor center, one of the volunteers, Beth Seekman, talks about what is done with the artifacts once they're brought in from the dig. For starters, it all begins with good old-fashioned cleaning. Are you washing it just in plain water, or is there some dish soap here?
Nope, just plain water.
And some toothbrushes.
We first put them in a little strainer, shake the strainer to get the loose dirt off, and then use the toothbrushes and sponges to clean the detail so that you can see exactly what you're working with.
Okay. And could I pick up some of these right in here? It looks kind of like a rock, but it also, this looks like a piece of pottery what is this?
Yeah, that's a piece of pottery. You can usually tell the difference between a pottery and just a limestone or sandstone because the side is usually smooth, and if you turn it over and look at it, you can see white flecks in the pottery. Is made from the clay. They dig up clay from the ground and mix it with, crush up shell and add that to the clay to make it stronger. Then they build a fire, and after the clay dries, they form it into what they wanted, a bowl or a jug or whatever they're making. They let it dry for a while. They put it into a fire, and then it comes out strong that they can use it.
Now, when you say they, of course, you are talking about the Native Americans that lived here maybe 1,000 years ago, correct?
Right. And that's what's really exciting is when you're out at the digs and you get some artifacts out, you know that that's been in the ground for 1,000 years and it was touched by a Native American.
And as I leave the visitor center and go out to the mounds, I soon find Beth is not the only one who feels that way.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, especially, you know, the scale of everything that is here is really just, it's amazing to something that, you know, this many people are living here is really awesome.
That's Caitlin Rankin. She's a PhD candidate at Washington University in St. Louis. Can you describe to people where we are?
So right now we're actually standing in something that we call the East Plaza, and we're looking to the west towards Monk's Mound. And so the site was organized, we think, with Monk's Mound at the very center and four what we call mound and plaza groups in each of the cardinal directions. So we have a North Plaza, an East Plaza, West Plaza, and to the south we actually have a Grand Plaza. And so this is what we think the organization of the central precinct of Cahokia looked like.
Fellow WashU graduate student Joy Versman is getting her digging tools ready, and she's been intrigued by Cahokia mounds for quite some time.
I grew up in St. Louis, so I would take social studies field trips as a little elementary school kid over here.
And as we talk outside, about 200 yards from the large Monk's Mound, I notice a big hole in the ground, dug perfectly with 90-degree sides.
The hole is about maybe 2.5 meters by about 2.5 meters by about 4.5 meters, over 2 meters deep in some places.
Meter is roughly a yard?
Yeah, thereabouts. The twine that you see strung up along the walls is actually for mapping purposes. Cahokia is laid out on a meter-by-meter grid, the Cahokia grid, so those strings are strung up along different meter marks to help us map the precise coordinates of different patterns in the soil, different artifacts we find in the walls, to let us really piece together the overall map of Cahokia. When we find big or really important pieces in the soil. Sometimes we find little rocks or pieces of pottery that are no more than a centimeter big, but when we find bigger stuff, we will piece plot it, which means we know where it is in the site down to the centimeter, in both northing, easting, and elevation. When you work out here long enough, you get pretty familiar with what the different classes of artifact that you're going to find are. You can look at something and be like, oh yeah, that's more pottery, that's a rock. That's a rock, but a special rock.
Okay.
But it takes washing it off to tell some of the little details, but you can pretty immediately tell, oh yes, that is shell-tempered pottery that is red-slipped, and just based on what you know of trends over time can begin to place things in a context.
Even though it's always nice to find artifacts like shells, pieces of pottery, or an ancient knife, the big interest at this hole is, well, the stuff I'm standing on and in. Here's Caitlin Rankin again.
Where we're working at, a lot of our concern is actually the soil itself is an artifact. So we're interested because they're not using stones to, you know, build their architecture. They're using soil. So we actually study the soil, and that's one of the main things that we're looking at whenever we're studying mounds. And also one of the things we're really interested in now is not the mound itself, but the surface that is below the mounds. So, you know, just like whenever you go to build a house, you don't normally just plop it somewhere. You normally have to prepare a surface. So one of the things that we're working on understanding a little bit more is how they changed the landscape even before they really started building these mounds.
And as we talk, it becomes very clear that I'm not the only one wanting to understand these early people, because within no time we're surrounded by a group of people for an impromptu question and answer session.
Have you guys found a lot of stuff out here?
So in this mound, we actually don't find so much material because the soil they're using to build the mound just is natural soil that doesn't have a lot of stuff in it. But over there at Mound 34, because they were using soil that came from another village site, it's full of artifacts.
So like arrowheads and stuff like that?
Yeah, we do find some. We find a lot of ceramics, the lithics. Over there at that site, we actually found a Raimi knife. So it was really a huge knife made out of stone flint. So it was really cool.
After hearing about the large earthworks and the artifacts made by these ancient people, the nagging question to me was, where did they originate? I posed this question to Caitlin's supervising professor, Dr. John Kelly, of the Department of Anthropology at Washington University in St. Louis. Where did they come? Did they come across the Bering land bridge 10,000 years prior, or?
Well, they'll tell you that they were always here. And when they say something like that, even though as an archaeologist we are fully aware that they came from Northeast Asia, they are correct in their assessment, because there was no one sitting at the land bridge saying, "Welcome to Alaska," with Sarah Palin holding the sign. Anyways, but you get the idea. So, I mean, as far as they're concerned, whether it was Northeast Asia or here, I mean, they're basically on Earth here for their entire existence.
And stay with WSIU Radio for part two of our feature about Cahokia, as we hear more from Dr. Kelly about the fascinating people who made Cahokia mounds, why they left, and what lessons can we learn from this ancient civilization. That's next time on WSIU In Focus. I'm Kevin Boucher.